On this episode, a brief update on FAA reauthorization. An air show happening on the beach, literally. And welcoming a whole new group of aviation enthusiasts who need an FAA medical. All on this episode of the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach Podcast. Your home for aero medical information that matters.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Mayo Clinic Clear Approach Podcast. I'm Mitch Nelson.
And I'm Clay Cole, your medical co-pilots, coming to you from Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, where the pattern is clear, the wings are all level, and the AMEs are all above average.
I read they may have to turn off the lights at the FAA. A reauthorization bill to fund the agency is apparently supposed to be signed very soon, or else it might be pretty dark in Washington and Elk City.
Yep, the House actually passed its version, and the Senate was trying to reconcile any differences in what they call conference committee before the deadline when the funding runs out. You know, some of our listeners must wonder why we care if the FAA stays open or not. I mean, aren't most systems at the agency considered, quote unquote, critical, and everything goes forward as is? Well, not exactly. Unfortunately, the medical reviewers and the people who process medical applications seem to be considered sort of, I don't know, extraneous. And of course, that makes our lives as aviation medical examiners, and of course our pilots, all of whom need medicals, simply miserable. So, you know, you phone Oklahoma City, you get a doo-doo-doo, we're sorry, the number you have reached has been disconnected and is no longer in service. Anyway, it seems like this budget crisis happens almost every year, but traditionally, the agency has been funded for 5 years at a time. Now, the latest version of the reauthorization bill, which was delayed, of course, from last year, and pushed forward gradually, but anyway, it actually increases the FAA budget $1.2 billion to continue efforts to modernize information technology and to hire 1,800 more air traffic controllers. But of course, no physician reviewers in the aeromedical certification division, much to our chagrin. So while we may see a lot more Class 2 medicals for controllers, no new dollars are actually there to process all those medicals. Mm-hmm. And the goal of the budget bump was, of course, also to improve the condition and reliability of the critical information technology and all the telecommunication systems currently used within the national airspace. And of course, this includes the NOTAM system.
Yeah, and I remember when the entire NOTAM system crashed last year, and they had to place an entire system-wide ground stop on all flights one morning. And that was the first time that happened, I think, since 9/11.
Yeah, you know, I think the FAA attributed that one to a contract vendor that was doing some form of system maintenance and unintentionally deleted some files. So at some point, there's probably some congressman who had their flight delayed, and maybe that stimulated a little more interest in the system. I wonder if it was the same company that inadvertently triggered the tsunami warning sirens in Hawaii a few years ago.
Yeah. I wonder what this button does.
Well, Mitch, I know you and I have gone to a lot of air shows over the years. You know, it's exciting to think that the spring and summer flying seasons are right around the corner. Wouldn't it be awesome to just be able to lay on the beach and watch a great air show?
Yeah, it sure would. Hey, maybe you should think about going to the Pacific Air Show down in Huntington Beach, California this fall. I read that event officials have landed two aircraft on the beach a couple of weeks ago as a preview for what's planned to come later this year, October 4th through 6th. And, you know, they plan to build the very first temporary oceanfront runway for the air show. It's considered to be the largest air show in the U.S. based on attendance, at least according to the air show people there. And this will be the eighth year for the show. Yeah, they have a ton of civilian aircraft coming, Thunderbirds, F-22 Raptor demonstration team, and even A-10 demonstration team all expected to be there.
Very cool. So great. Sand, sun, aircraft. Doesn't get much better than that.
No, that'd be great. Speaking of sun, it's that time of year when we start dusting off things in the hangar and getting ready for another flying season.
Oh, yes. And for balloonists, we tend to make our annual pilgrimage to the local balloon port to get our system annual.
Really? The annual hot air balloons?
Yeah. Everything with an N number needs an annual inspection, signed off by an FAA-certified repair station, or every 100 hours, whichever comes first.
So what exactly do they do for hot air balloon annual?
They go through the fabric gore by gore, and that's a lot of fabric when you're talking about something that's taller than a 7-story building. And, you know, they do fabric testing. It's called a pull test. That involves checking the material, especially towards the top of the fabric envelope around the vent where the temperatures tend to be the highest. And they subject it to certain amounts of tensile pressure. They pull against the fabric to see if it rips, and any fabric that was overheated or is a little bit sketchy is replaced.
Yeah. What else do they do?
They go through the rubber tubing, you know, the hoses that carry propane from the tanks to the burner, and they replace the O-rings in each of the burners, and they make sure there's no damage to any of the wicker or rattan involving the basket. They also, they check the electronics, like the instruments that we use to measure temperature at the top of the envelope, of course, the altimeter, the variometer, and they update our aircraft logbooks.
I heard balloonists are now required to get a Class 2 medical. Is that right?
Yeah, well, for those balloon pilots flying commercial operations, the answer is yes. For many pilots within this category, they've gotten their commercial rating because, well, most participate in community events such as mass fly-ins or maneuvering competitions, in which we toss basically a little beanbag with a streamer onto a target from the air. And the event officials typically offer lodging or some other incentives to get lots of balloons to come to their event in order to fly sponsors or their guests. Or if you have a logo on the balloon envelope that you're flying, or maybe a special shape with a banner or a specific sponsor on it, then that is considered commercial operations. And now you're required to have a Class 2 medical for that.
Wasn't that because of the balloon crash down in Texas?
Well, that certainly helped move things along at warp speed. You know, there was a tragic event in July 2016 that occurred just south of Austin, Texas, down in Lockhart, as part of a commercial balloon flight in which a pilot with 15 passengers struck power lines and, unfortunately, all were killed. The basket had separated from the load cables holding the fabric envelope. The NTSB eventually held a formal hearing that December, and then finally in October 2017 determined that the event was caused by the pilot's pattern of poor decision-making, including, well, flying in marginal weather, and that he had unreported depression and ADHD, that he took sedating prescription drugs, and the fact that pilots did not have to hold a medical certificate even for paying commercial flights, and that was contributing as a factor to the accident. You know, this resulted in a recommendation and ultimately a requirement that all commercial balloon operations would have to require a Class 2 medical. And interestingly, this was actually legislated by Congress. It didn't actually come initially through the FAA, and the FAA initially resisted stricter oversight, but it has come to pass now, and balloonists often struggle to get a medical certificate.
So that one crash really has affected the sport of ballooning.
You know, I attended the Iowa Balloonist Safety Seminar recently, and that specific crash was discussed in detail by the president of the Balloon Federation of America. His name is Pat Cannon. He was one of the guest speakers there, and he outlined the series of really terrible decisions made by that pilot and that many balloonists in the community elected not to fly that morning, since the dew point and the temperature were sort of right on top of each other, meaning that, you know, fog and low clouds were certainly likely to develop right in that area. And similarly, the pilot had a reputation for going rogue and doing some really kind of questionable things in terms of jeopardizing safety within the ballooning sphere. You know, his point, Pat's point, was that no one really said anything in the community, and unfortunately there really wasn't a venue to do so either. We always hear, you know, see something, say something, but there really wasn't that moment where the pilot said something either to him or to other officials. So now balloonists are lining up to get Class 2 medicals, but a lot are stuck in the line sort of going to nowhere. You know, many pilots are having difficulty because, well, some are older and they've been on antidepressants. They've had prior heart disease or other medical issues, and although they've had a mental health professional or maybe rock stable in terms of their medical condition, they've not had to report anything specifically in the past, and now to do so under an FAA paradigm, such as, you know, seeing a HIMS psychiatrist or having a HIMS AME to get a special issuance, is a whole new ballgame for them. Many of these pilots fly balloons because they love this pure form of flying. You know, they have day jobs. It's not like they're doing it for a living. But unfortunately, some balloon pilots have simply given up trying to get a medical because they've not had anywhere to turn. And so, you know, the FAA aeromedical certification process remains sort of shrouded in mystery.
Wow. So is getting a medical really a showstopper for most balloonists?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, a survey of the membership of the BFA, the Balloon Federation of America, which is the largest membership association for that category of aircraft, recently released a survey involving 839 pilots that suggested that the top five overall future concerns to the vitality of the sport by pilots was FAA regulations, obtaining a medical certification, and then other things like competition with drones within the airspace. This was followed overall by cost, like increasing insurance rates because of tragic accidents like we've been discussing,
right,
and also landowner relations. You know, keep in mind, when we land with a balloon, especially even out in the middle of nowhere, we're technically trespassing every time we land. We spend a lot of time within our safety seminars talking about the importance of educating the general public of what we do and why we do it, to get a general sense of good feeling about it so that we don't get continued restricted areas when we're flying. And interestingly, on that survey, 68% of those surveyed were commercially rated balloonists. So a lot of the balloonists out there, existing pilots, are commercially rated within the ballooning community.
Right. So any other pearls you took away from the safety seminar?
You mean, other than the hilarious story of the hot air balloon event where one of the event officials in what we call a hair balloon, so sometimes there's an event called a hair and hound.
Okay.
The hair balloonist goes out, they do some maneuvers, and then they make a brief landing in a field, they set up a target, and then all of the hound balloons are behind them. They're having to maneuver to follow them using the micrometeorologic conditions, you know, in the area, and drop this beanbag with the streamer over the top of it. Well, on this particular day, the hair balloon saw this great open field that unfortunately was a ammunition depot, highly restricted. It was military, and a large group of balloonists who all followed along thinking that, well, you know, if the officials land there, it must be okay. They all landed in the same restricted spot. And oh boy, the story was it took all day to get all of them extracted on that one. I think another thing I learned, it was emphasized that it's okay to cancel your flight if it's just one of those days. And I think our listeners know we've all had those days, you know, where things are just not clicking. You know, you wake up late, or for a balloonist, you forget your ground crew chase team maps at home, or you leave your igniter sitting on the counter, or, you know, you leave the keys for the chase vehicle in your pocket after you start your ascent. All of these little strings of events where you sort of get out of that pattern of going through your checklist and you begin to get further and further behind the situation, that's when bad things happen. And even if you're an experienced pilot and you know your checklist like like spinal reflex, you can get lulled into a sense of complacency. I think we all can, regardless of what aircraft we fly. But there's no room for complacency when you're considering safety. And I think that probably was the biggest take-home point.
Thanks for joining us today on the podcast, and we look forward to having you join us on future episodes.
And remember that if you encounter a health-related question pertaining to your aeromedical certification, you can reach our Clear Approach website at clearapproach.mayoclinic.org for an online consultation. And send your comments and suggestions for future podcasts to clearapproach@mayo.edu. Soft landings and make it a great day.